This is the GoatCast.
Hi, welcome to the GoatCast, episode number 3. Today we're going to talk about our plans for the new year. Stay tuned.
Spinning to my story, right away I heard silence.
Hi, welcome to the show. On this episode, we're going to talk about our plans for 2011. We'll talk about the garden, we'll talk about the animals, and all kinds of other stuff. But before that, let's go ahead and take your calls. Well, it looks like we don't have any calls this week, but those crickets are a great reminder to call the show. It's really easy to do. You just go to the website, thegoatcast.blogspot.com, and on the sidebar, there's a little call the show icon. If you click that icon, it's going to turn around, and it will allow you to type in your number. Once you type in your number and hit connect, it will call you back. It's that simple. Just leave a message. All right, now time for the farm around section. For the farm around section, I want to talk about what we're going to start tracking for 2011. You know, what kind of details are we going to pass across to you guys? And a few of the things that I've come up with is egg totals, milk totals, garden yields, and meat yields. And then, of course, if there's anything else that you guys would like to see, please feel free to call the farm phone and let me know if there's, you know, anything specific that you're wondering about. In addition to what I just mentioned, I think that we should also start to track, you know, some of our inputs. You know, how many bales of hay are we going through, or how much grain are we going through? How much is this costing us? You know, I would love to pass along the full package and let you guys see what we're putting into this compared to what we're getting out of this. For instance, in the winter, our input goes way up and our output goes way down. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy that when we're contributing the most financially to the farm, we're getting the least out of it. But that's a part of what I kind of want to pass along, just to show you guys the full package of how this all works. And so, you know, if there is anything, like I said before, if there's anything specific that you'd like us to track, let us know. But those are some of the things that I'm going to start implementing. And it's going to take me a while, so give me a couple episodes to get this going, because I'm not the only one who collects all of the items of, you know, food around here. For instance, my daughter, she's the one who collects the eggs. So I need to figure out a system where she can track that each day. So, you know, one of the things I was thinking about was maybe just putting up a marker board. And when she came in from collecting the eggs, you know, before she goes and washes them and everything, she can take down a tally of, you know, how many chicken eggs did we get, how many duck eggs did we get, and, you know, and figure out, you know, a weekly total based upon that. I really think that's going to be great, because not only is it going to allow us to be able to track everything, but it's going to teach her skills that she wouldn't have otherwise, where she comes in and actually writes this stuff down and then evaluates and makes averages of what she's getting. So in the end, I think it's going to be a win-win, and I can't wait to start going and get everything all figured out. Anyway, that's what we're thinking of doing for the farm around. Let us know if there's anything you'd like to see. All right, let's move on to the next section. Okay, this week we're going to talk about what our plans are for the new year. I have brought in my lovely partner, Reveille, to go over this because she is half of what we do here. And so with that said, we're going to get into it. But first, I want to give you guys an update on the alfalfa issue that we talked about in the first episode. That's kind of progressed along, and there is the ability to send President Obama and Secretary Valsack, the letter, basically requesting that they put, you know, a moratorium on planting of the GE alfalfa. So if you know if you want to do that, the web address is truefoodnow.org, and you can go ahead and send the letter from there. All right, let's get into...
And the letter, just so you know, the letter itself is generated for you, so you don't have to create your own letter. There's just a form that you can just put in your name, and it gets sent from you from their site. It's just, so it's really easy, so it's a couple clicks on your part. Yeah. And to make a big difference.
That makes it a lot easier. It also allows you, if you are very passionate about it, you can type in your own body to the letter. But so there's several different options. Anyway, we would absolutely love everyone to support, you know, keeping that garbage out of the animals' mouths.
Which in turn is your mouth.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and talk about the garden. You know, that's what we'll start out with. I wanted to, I guess, start out with what our garden plans are this year. Red, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, we've talked about expanding our garden from the little plot that we had when we first moved in last year. And so it was a small plot, but it was nice to, at least it was a nice start to know what we were dealing with, and because everything was such a quick move last year, we weren't quite sure what we would have time for. So, well, I think we were successful last year, and so I think we have a lot of, the small area we have now, we know what can grow in there, and we know what we can handle for that small part. There is our neighbor's yard, backyard.
Yeah.
That is larger, and so he's not using this large piece of his land that's kind of overgrown, but I think once we get that measured, so there's some measuring that we need to do back there so we can know how we can do our rows, because I think we're going to do a row garden for that as opposed to doing raised beds or circular gardening. That would be interesting one year. But once we get that measured, we'll be able to kind of figure out how much we can put in there, because we have a huge list of things that we want to try and do. Just, like more beans was one of the things on our list, so that we could store beans. But then again, there's, how much space we have. So that's one issue. One thing we have to, before we get into some major planning, is really just measuring and finding out what we can and what we can rotate out. So what are some quick growing things that we could rotate out at that point, and we know some things grow fairly quickly, like carrots and radishes, and
those we can kind of put away as we're going along.
Yeah.
Just to give you guys a little background, when we moved into our current house last year, and we the first thing that we did was go and meet the neighbors, and we were pleasantly surprised that all of our neighbors were really cool. A lot of our neighbors do have animals, but the neighbors that immediately surround us don't. And a few of them aren't using their yards completely to their fullest extent. So we've been able to ask them and make agreements where we can, we can kind of farm their property in exchange for, part of the garden share.
Yeah, one neighbor has... one neighbor is a real green thumb, and she gave us a ton of stuff last year, and I think we were able to also give her some things, and we'd like to give her more things this year from our garden, and to learn more from her about what she does, just because she's been gardening in this area longer than we have, and, soils are different. The soil is definitely different here from even just a few miles away from where we lived before. It's less sandy out here, and that makes a difference in what you can grow successfully and or how deep you can plant things as well. And then, in her yard, she has a cherry tree, so we were able to make a bunch of cherry jam last year, which we opened up our last bottle today, actually.
Yeah. We did a little bartering with the neighbors last year. We traded some eggs and milk for about 20 pounds of cherries, and that was just wonderful. And it really gets me into kind of what this podcast is about. It's about bringing people together and creating these micro communities. And one of my thoughts was that small communities have so much more power than the global system that we're attached to as it is. And it, so if we can, you know, grow these local bonds, these things, these bonds that have been basically eliminated over the past few years. And also, just to forgive us, our dog is like scratching up a storm over there, and he's making all kinds of noise, but so you guys will have to bear with us on that.
I think, besides, you know, just knowing your neighbors, on top of that, with the gardening thing, we don't all have a half acre or an acre or more to garden on or to have animals on. And even if you're just on a third of an acre with a small plot, garden plot, if you have that kind of a friendship with your neighbors, in order, you know, or it can, you can base a friendship off of it, you can at least start to grow, you know, more of one item, and they can grow more of another item, so that you can share and trade and have something that will get you through that growing season, so that you have fresh fruit and vegetables that are not from genetically modified seeds, that are, you're able to provide your family something that's nutritious, more than just strawberries that have been sprayed with pesticides. If that's something you feel strongly about, more than that, I think the whole bonding with your neighbors, knowing your neighbors, is important. And if it's through gardening,
you know, growing food, making food, you know, these are great things, and it not only creates a more stable environment for everyone involved, but it brings people together. You know, I can't count how many times my neighbors just in the last year have been over here helping with me with something, or I've gone over to their place and helped them with something, and you know, we've really become great friends. And I think in just the short time that we've had.
And that's new for us. Josh is a little bit more outgoing than I am, and so it's been definitely a learning experience for me to go outside my comfort zone and be more neighborly. But I think in the world where we are so set apart from any personal communication, personal contact with others, because of texting and the technology that we live in, the world that we live in, I think it stretches who you are, and so that's a big thing, and I think makes you a better person for it, and makes you more in touch with your local community more, and more willing to seek out local products, just because of the people you get to meet and the opportunities you can have from that.
I think that you make a great point, and that point seems to be that some of the technologies that we've developed really pull us apart from each other. You know, we're not all hanging out on our porches anymore, you know, talking to our neighbors every night. And, you know, sometimes we feel like we don't have the time because maybe because of our jobs, or maybe because of, you know, whatever situation. But it seems like a lot of these communication strategies that have been put together over the last, I don't know, I'd say 15, 20 years, has really unraveled these small communities. And so it's actually nice to strive for something, and it's nice to see the localization kind of movement going. And I think that's going to really bring people back together, because you do become personally involved with people. You really make these bonds, you know, and when it's about something like feeding yourselves and nourishing yourselves, it becomes a wonderful connection, you know, creating great camaraderie and, you know, wonderful, beautiful relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I guess if we're going to get back to our plans for 2011, gardening, our plan for the gardening is, you know, sharing the land, not only because we can get more produce off of it, but also because we can have better relationships with our neighbors. And that in alone is a wealth of for just your personal stuff. So gardening, you know, planting the garden, we will probably have to get our list back to you and update you on what we've decided on, you know.
And as we go along, we start planting things, we'll let you know what we're planting and what we're doing there. We have a whole bunch of different options available to us. Like, we have a ditch out back that is perfect for asparagus. And it, now, asparagus takes a while to get established, mm-hmm. but once, you, I mean, there's no better time to start than mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, but we have a ton of those pussy willows. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
They're grown in there, so I guess my plan here is just to have a lot of questions for you guys. If anyone knows of any really quick, awesome way to get rid of pussy willows, call into the GoatCast line, because we would definitely love to get rid of those and supplement that, just put place asparagus in there, because we know asparagus grows really good in a ditch, and asparagus is yummy.
Yeah.
Even with the side effects of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think that with removal of things, you know, definitely something that's not impactful from mm-hmm. a chemical standpoint, we're never really interested in dumping stuff on our land.
Yeah, so those ones, if you have an all-natural way to get rid of them, we know that a bunch of elbow grease always works, and that you need to get in there and just do it. So just we understand that if that's the case, then that's the case. But if you know something quick and easy that is all-natural, then we would definitely love to hear that. So that's kind of our plan for the garden, you know, and our hopes for it. The garden can be such a huge thing, but we have some strawberries that we started last year. I'm super excited about where those being bigger. I'm also, along with gardening, just coming up with a plan for canning. And, you know, if we need to pick 2 weekends or 3 weekends where we garden,
preserve.
Yeah, we just preserve and can what we can't, what we can.
One of the things that I've actually been thinking about is the type of tomato that we choose is going to be important. Now, there's several types of tomatoes out there, and you always want to figure out what you're going to use. And one of the things that we're shooting towards is because we're trying to preserve so much, we're going to plant a large amount of paste tomatoes, which basically are a bush variety that kind of all come due at the same time. They basically grow, they're very heavy yielding, and they all come due at the same time. That purpose of that breed is to be able to put, you know, have large amounts of tomatoes all harvestable at once. And so we're going to plant a huge amount of those in our garden that's shared with our neighbor. And then we might plant a few, you know, other varieties that are just, you know, for our table tomatoes mm-hmm. in our small plot that we keep just here in our backyard. A few other things that I think we're looking forward to is potatoes and carrots and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Stuff that we can put away for the winter next year.
Yeah, and there's onions and garlic already in the ground, so that's going to be exciting. Hopefully, I did the onions in 3 different ways so that we at least get some onions next year, which we'll see.
Yeah, we had to jump on top of it really quickly.
I got back from a trip with my sister in Mexico, and that was the last weekend before it snowed. I think I had 2 days before it snowed. It snowed that week, and I did it all on a Sunday. Just went out there and just dug like crazy. But we got it in, so hopefully we got a ton of garlic and onions in, so hopefully that will be... they will produce something. If not, they'll flower, and we'll get some the next year.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's always, we have a small farm just down the street from us that produces a lot of food as well. And I think one of our plans, at least, you know, like this is one of my personal plans, is to, for whatever we end up not getting, mm-hmm. is to go buy from them and put underneath our cellar. And so we try to go through the next winter basically on locally produced food, whether it's from our garden or from, you know, the small farm down the street or our shared neighbor garden. Yeah.
And everyone out there can do the same thing. Just finding, you may have to drive a little ways out of the city, not too much, but even within larger cities now, there are community shares and community share gardens. So and they're called CSAs. And so you can look for a local CSA to join or even take part in. And so if it's a community garden where you each kind of purchase a plot to take care of that year, that season, then you actually can take a share of what everyone else is growing And so even if you just don't have the, you know, you're in an apartment or something, I think that even, you know, there's resources available so that you can, you know, not, you don't have to spend the extra cost for organic materials that are organic produce that's shipped to your store via a semi truck.
And sometimes I think that the organic thing is losing.
Yeah. I used quotation marks around the word organic, although you couldn't see that.
It's losing its value these days because what's happened is these corporate entities have found that there's a huge amount of money to be made in the organic market. And so they've really put a lot of interest into producing some of those foods.
And that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a whole podcast on its own. But, you know, going back to the plans, trying to stay on top of the subject, that's sort of what we're planning for the garden. So should we talk about the animals a little?
Yeah.
I have good news, super good news.
Oh, yeah,
I want to announce it. A rabbit's given birth. So we're really excited about that.
Well, one rabbit.
Yeah, one of our rabbits just gave birth about a week ago.
And yeah, a couple date nights.
Yeah, maybe 3 days ago.
3 or 4 days, yeah. Not too very long.
But we're really excited because that means in 6 weeks we're going to have some delicious rabbit to put in the freezer.
Which, interesting. Which made me think a lot about animals and birth and humans and birth and crazy stuff that went through my head on that. So with animals, we're excited because we have another source of protein for our family that is born and raised on our farm without having all sorts of chemicals pumped into it, mm-hmm. which is obviously a theme for us. We just really are just so nervous about the long-term effects of
you know, some of these hormones and different things they're using in the meat these days. And the fact that the meat, really, to tell you the truth, you go down to the grocery store, you buy, say, a chunk of chicken or a little bit of pork, that meat has been grown under very stressful situation. I always call it torture meat, but I know that kind of has a bad name, but that, it really is. I mean, like, if you don't know about some of the, you know, there will be a future episode on meat in general, but, you know, CAFOs and different things like that are incredibly inhumane places. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that we grow our own food and grow our own meat is because we control the lifestyle that these animals have.
And I think it's important to note that we don't know the long-term effects of on the human race right now, I guess, that anything that's genetic modified, anything that has hormones in it, anything that's pumped full of antibiotics, we don't know. I think we're beginning to see what the effects are. Obesity is one of them. The high rate of high blood pressure and diabetes. And I know this the industry that I have my regular job in, I don't think I see one person that doesn't have one of those things going on with them. And so I always wonder, you know, if we're taking these, since we're taking these steps, I'm just hoping that, and that we won't have, just because we don't know the long, I don't know how to say it.
Well, you know, we're kind of going back to a lifestyle that used to exist. There's a lot of different things that you can read about out there. One of a great book that I would suggest reading is In Defense of Food. That's a great book. It's written by the same guy that put together the Omnivore's Diet. And, you know, it kind of talks about dietary fat and, you know, what people have eaten and, you know, kind of the effects that it's a good book. You should get into it.
Excited about
meat's important.
And
one of the things one of the reasons, at least I know, that I raise the meat here on the farm, it's because you gain a different kind of respect for the animals. Yeah. You watch a chicken running around out there, and then when when it's time and you do end up harvesting that chicken, you have a different kind of respect. I mean, whether you like it or not, you're going to use that animal for everything that you can get out of it, because it's very personal at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll bring the chicken in, we'll cook with it, and then we'll boil the bones for stock. We will get every single ounce of use out of that chicken just because we know what it meant. You know, it's a trade-off. We provide a good life in trade for nourishment.
And I think it makes you more respectful for your food and what's in front of you at the dinner table. You don't take food for granted. I think also being able to see the cycle of life as it's meant to be is important. And just seeing how animals are naturally reproduce and naturally give birth and naturally take care of their young without going to classes or the hospital.
I always get really excited when I see the goats give birth, because baby goats are the cutest creatures. I mean, they're just wonderful. They do the little Bambi thing, and they're just
they're
great.
So we have the baby rabbits. We'll hopefully get to see them in maybe six weeks.
We haven't seen them yet, because
they're hidden.
Let's explain a little bit about, and I'm going to do a show on rabbits, but
my take on that, this is really cool. Like the rabbits, they are pregnant for like 21 days, and that's it. The gestation period is not very long, and then what they do, so we put this a nesting box in there, and we decided to purchase one instead of buy one, just because we just didn't know when the babies were coming, and so we build one. So we purchased one, and so put that in their little living area, and the little mommy rabbit who's pregnant pulls out all of her little fuzzy hair from her belly. So to us, she still looks like she has all this hair, and so I don't know if she, you know, distributed where she was pulling it out so that she didn't go bald in any one space, because we can't see her belly. But
what she does is she just fluffs off the hair.
So she's got all this fluff of hair, a massive amount. You just didn't even think, to me, I think, well, why isn't she bald? But that's how much hair is in there, and it's all fluffy and fuzzed out. And then she has her babies in the nesting box. But then I know Josh said that at that point, then after they have their babies, they only go into the nesting box once a day to feed the babies, which is interesting. So we don't really see her go in to the box a lot at all. And well, I haven't seen her in the box yet, and it's only been a few days though. But the babies just kind of live in the fuzz, and they don't open their eyes for 10 days. So that means they're not really moving around that much. But we are assuming that all of them, that's our laundry that stopped. You hear that buzz. Once they open their eyes, then they will come out. But so until then, they're not moving around a lot. But if any of them have died, then the mommy rabbit would actually pull the dead ones out of the nesting box. And so they've made it three, four days now.
Yeah, they've made it for a while.
Yeah, so we're excited.
While is important too.
Yeah, so I think we're successful so far. We'll have to give you an update on that though, as that goes along. Obviously, we will. But
there's a few reasons why one of the interesting things about rabbits is the reason that they only feed once a day is because their milk is actually the most caloric milk out of any mammal's milk. It's very nutritive, and so they only have to feed the babies once a day, and it's really interesting to see a mom rabbit. Mm-hmm. It's almost like nothing's happened. She just sort of hops around her pen and eats and drinks like she usually does. But, you know, there's this whole little nest of rabbits in there. Now, the reason we don't know how many rabbits there are, how many babies there are, is because we are as hands-off when it comes to birthing as possible.
We try to let the
animal do what it would naturally do. We try to let it live its natural life. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Things always get messed up when humans put their hands in things anyway. So we're just kind of letting them do their thing. But that kind of, that's new about our animals, and so that means that if this is successful, then we need to find one. We have a male rabbit, so we would need to, if both girl rabbits are producing babies for food at that point, then we need to find a new shelter for the boy rabbit. And
yeah, we'll get into that on the rabbit episode. Yeah. I'll have a future episode about rabbits.
That's part of our plans for 2011 when it comes to animal shelters, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and rabbits are, just to put it out there, rabbit is a very sustainable meat. If there's anything that you can raise in your backyard, anywhere, It's some rabbits. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful creatures. They're quiet. They're low key. You can produce most mm-hmm. of their food if you wish. You mm-hmm. can grow their whole year's worth of food on your mm-hmm. property, and you don't have to have very much land. Mm-hmm. But we'll get into that another time.
So then the next animal, though, is for 2011 planning for animals, we have the pig that we've decided. Well,
I'm excited about the pig.
Yeah,
the pig is great.
But the cool thing though about the pig is that because we chose the. And I don't think we have to choose. We're not changing its shelter or in any way this year at all, because we're only going to winter raise a Berkshire pig who is more hardy in the winter, because then we don't have the smell of the pig in the summertime.
Let me put something out there. If you decide to get into animals, there is a small amount of smell that you're going to be putting up with. But to tell you the truth, any small animal operation at the point of producing food for maybe one or two families is not going to it doesn't fall into the same category
as living next to it, like a dairy farm or a meat farm or something like a huge operation. It's not, it's very small, but
you know, we have a little compost pile and, mm-hmm. and I don't think that anything out there really stenches up enough to even get over to.
No, but I think a pig would, though, just even on the warmer days, I think a pig would if you...
Yeah, pigs, because they're omnivores, have a different kind of smell. And so we choose to raise a pig during the winter because, you know, it kind of controls the smell issues and different things like that. We like to be as low-key as possible.
We don't want to disturb some of our neighbors who wouldn't, you know, don't totally see eye to eye with us. Not that I don't think we have any though, but
yeah, I don't think
I think we're just anyone. So nervous just because of our last situation.
We came from a place where we weren't as accepted.
We weren't
as
very welcome. No. But that's okay.
But you know, that's another, again, probably another podcast.
Yeah. Neighbor relations.
You know, with the animals, let's go ahead and talk about,
did we have any
more started sheltered? On the pig. I want to talk about the pig a little. Well, getting into charcuterie right now, and maybe that would be a good time to talk about that. Charcuterie is basically the craft of preserving meat. And so with the pig, he's here so we can make some salami, make sausages, make, you know, hams, prosciutto, stuff mm-hmm. like that. Charcuterie is a pretty interesting art mm-hmm. if you get into it. It's, you know, there's lots of different preservation techniques, and in the future I will have a podcast that basically mm-hmm. deals with all of the different details around that. But, you know, what you really are capable of doing once you kind of get a grasp on things is making a lot of your own meat products, you know,
dried meats, but
like sausages, like fresh mm-hmm. sausages. You can make hams, mm-hmm. a lot of different, anything that you'd really look at in the store. Like, say you, a prosciutto mm-hmm. or a pancetta or a, you know, you're just average American bacon. I mean, you can really, it's not that hard to learn how to do those things.
I come home to something new every week. So this last week I came home in our kitchen was a sausage stuffer from a restaurant supply company. So we got,
I tend to go a little bit overboard when I buy things, so I buy like the commercial versions of them.
Yeah, so we got the right one for everything that it needs to do. I think we could make sausage with that thing. It holds like 7 pounds of meat.
No, 11 pounds.
11 pounds of meat. So we are making sausages for our neighbors.
Yeah, it's great, though.
Most of the town we live in.
Very quality, very, you know, good construction. I that's one thing that I would really suggest. Whenever you make a purchase, consider a purchase for life. You know, you don't want to buy something that's cheaply made, because, you know, you're going to end up buying that again. So just buy it once, buy it for the quantity that seems maybe a little bit more than what you need at the moment. Mm-hmm. And you'll do fine. You know, like, that's the thing when it comes down to the tools of what you're using in the kitchen is a very important place when you're trying to produce a lot of food for yourself. Mm-hmm. And so you want to invest in items that are going mm-hmm. to make your life easier. They're going to stand up to the use that you're going to mm-hmm. put them through. And so, you know, with some of the different items that we buy, you know, grinders and mixers and, you know, stuffers, stuff like that, we always go with something that's very good quality. Because we don't want, we know down the road, you never know what's going to be, you know, what your options are going to be. You may be having to fix this device, and it's easier to fix a quality device than to fix something that's a piece of crap.
Yeah. So our, so we've got the, just becoming more, just for 2011, just being, providing more and more of our own meat. And so that, that has a part, a way to do it. One additional way of providing our own meat, or just mixing it up the way, you know, so that's usable, so that we don't have like one type of meat that we eat all the time. And so we've got the pig and then the turkeys. We had a successful year with turkeys this last year. I don't think we're,
I like turkeys a lot. They're great creatures, but you have to stay on top of their stupidity. I mean, they're not the smartest animals out there.
We're not going to change up any of their shelters this year. I think we've got it down. So we just, and so we're just going to do more of the Narragansetts this year, and provide the opportunity for our friends and family to purchase, you know, farm fresh turkey for Thanksgiving, which was pretty cool because this last year when they came, we did like a whole Christmas tree lot thing of turkeys. People would come and pick out their turkey, and I'd feed them hot apple cider from our local apple orchard, and it was a ton of fun. And so I think we're going to do the same thing, maybe do more turkeys this year and do more turkey evisceration. But I think we'll do the same type of turkeys, right?
Yeah. So what we do is we raise Narragansett turkeys. It's a heritage breed. And
which means they haven't been messed with genetically, which is cool.
Yeah.
But they still
grow
like
delicious,
super
tender, flavorful turkeys.
They still grow fast. I think you're only out a couple weeks longer on them.
So to raise them to market weight, it takes 8 months.
Yeah. So you're not out much longer than one that's been genetically messed with. So,
They're basically 6 months or so. The Narragansett turkeys are 8 months. Mm-hmm. But to tell you the truth, they're great animals. I mean, if you can keep them from killing themselves.
Yeah.
They're wonderful animals. They are very, very, any turkey is
stupid.
They're not the most intelligent animals. So you need to stay on top of wing trimming.
Oh yeah.
Cause they do fly very well.
We thought it was all cute and funny when they all slept in trees when they were young, but then they could fly up even higher and then flew into neighbor's yards that had dogs and committed suicide. And
it's pretty sad.
They fly to get away, but they don't know how to fly to get back. And it's just like craziness. Yeah.
We lost a few last year, and it was a waste. And that's one of the things that we feel very strongly about, is not wasting a life. And so we've made arrangements here on the farm to actually contain the turkeys in a way where
when they have enough room to
contained.
Yeah, they have enough room to move around
and live a natural life.
and have the ability to fly up on a little perch and sleep at night where they want to sleep, because they want to sleep up off the ground. So that's important. And so we made sure that those things are in place. But we also do trim their wings, because we have neighbor dogs that like Thanksgiving at any time of the year. So the turkeys, I think our plan for 2011 and the turkeys is we're not really changing anything we're doing, except maybe
we're going to do more.
We're going to do more turkeys.
It's a great way to help offset the cost of raising them. Turkeys do eat a fair amount.
But I think it's also important to, help offer the turkeys to our friends and family, and then whoever else is interested, just so that they, you know, have a chance at, you know, having a turkey that
is sustainably raised, locally raised. We always give our neighbors a turkey, because it's important to us to build those relationships and, you know, be that kind of person
and also
that kind of neighbor, you know?
Yeah. And our neighbors help us a lot though, too. Not like we're dependent on them or anything, but I think that they just as part of just being friends, you just do things together.
Yeah,
and that's just kind of what's happening.
Small communities. Yeah. I mean, that's what it's about is we've realized that we can't do every single thing out there. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as I respect every homesteader out there who provides everything for themselves, there's a part of me that says there is going to be a point where you actually have to kind of be a part of a group of people. And these little micro communities are, in my mind, much stronger than anyone trying to do it for themselves, and superior over a global sort of market, because it's more personal to that group. And so I like the fact mm-hmm. that we, you know, we're building a micro community.
Yeah, and fresh turkey is a great way to make new friends.
Yeah.
So, and then what do we have? So
yeah, let's shelters, talk about the shelters. Yeah. So we're going to build new shelters for all of the animals. Some of the animals.
Yeah. So those.
But we have some of our shelters fully built out. Yeah. Like the goat shelter is a wonderful area.
Yeah.
But I'd like to kind of improve upon even the chicken shelter. I want to put up a more permanent fence around there. Yeah. It has a fence as it is, but, you know, I'd like to put up something that is a bit more aesthetically pleasing, something that's, you know,
I think it looks great.
Are a little bit more, they're just improvements kind of over the long run that will make it a prettier place out there.
Yeah, so prettier, well, not like painted and like white picket fences and stuff like that.
Yeah, more like painted because that will help it not wear away in the rain.
So, and then just, I guess, focusing on chickens that
can basically lay a lot of eggs
and
be good meat birds as well.
So I think we have a bunch of bantams right now that we probably will be giving away to people that want chickens as pets. And so,
yeah, we do have some chickens that aren't necessarily
good egg layer. Yeah. I mean, there's one, ability. We do have one chicken who actually could have his own podcast. He has enough personality to do that. We call him Napoleon. He's a little sea bright bantam. He's just gorgeous, but he's the type of Napoleon
he
snuck up on me yesterday.
Yeah. He's the smallest chicken we have. And he has the biggest personality out of every chicken.
So we won't be giving him away just because he's just good for a laugh.
Yeah.
And then we have ducks though, because we want to do something else with the ducks this year. So 2011 includes a better duck plan, right?
Yeah, we're going to do a lot more ducks, and we're actually going to build a pond. Now, you know, as you've heard in our duck episode, ducks don't need water.
But I want a pond.
It makes them incredibly happy.
It makes them really happy.
They do love water.
We have some khaki Campbells. They actually like the water a little bit more than the Muscovies that we have. But we had some warm weather where the snow really melted, and then we had rain on top of it just this last week and a half.
Yeah.
And we had puddles out back, and the
They're drinking.
The khaki Campbells loved it. But I think I'm the one that's pushing for the pond just because I want a pond.
It'd be a nice little area for the animals the ducks to mm-hmm. wade in and mm-hmm. wash themselves. They ducks are really fun. They take baths every day.
Yeah, I think I'd want a pond regardless of whether we had ducks or not. So this is a good excuse for me to get the pond. Ponds are just pretty.
We might try to throw some fish in there.
The kids would love to grow some koi fish. I think that they would be really interested in seeing giant fish.
Put some catfish in there and see if we can harvest some. That'd be fun.
We'll see. That wasn't on our plan. We just added something off the cuff here. Yeah. But I think I want a pond. And then the pond would go on our middle yard, which is, last summer I just enjoyed sitting underneath the big tree because there's this huge tree in our middle yard. And even in the summer, in 100 degrees underneath that tree, it was a good 10 plus degrees cooler underneath there. And it was the perfect place to sit and read in the middle of the day. And so I'm really looking forward to that, because if there's a pond out there also and you get the sound of running water awesome summer day underneath this great tree. I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's something like
we
a
have
Norman
this part of our
Rockwell
yard.
Painting.
Yeah,
picture.
We have this part of our yard that's like the idyllic farm. It has like a little barn shed, and it has like a tire swing and a giant tree. It's kind of like that idyllic sort of picture that Norman Rockwell sort of small
I think,
town.
Yeah. So I'm glad that we have ducks, because I could get a pond. And so we're still doing a lot of research on ponds, though. We have a friend that actually builds ponds, and she's talked to us about it a little bit, so we'll probably pick her brain a little bit more so that we can do a lot of the work ourselves, because ponds can actually be quite expensive. We'll obviously keep you up to date on that. And we'll try and take pictures and put it up on the GoatCast website. So that you can see how that's coming along.
Yeah, let's talk about goats. Goats are, like you guys know, my favorite animal. They're wonderful. And
they're pregnant.
This year, yeah, they're we
three of them.
We have them pregnant. We're going to be milking three goats this next year. And with milking the goats, we're going to, you know, because we're doing three, we're going to have a huge amount of excess milk. So I'm really getting into, I want to expand my cheese making capabilities. I want to really kind of work on that. And then also I'm going to be offering, like I did last year, goat milking classes, which is a great way to kind of help the community understand that, goats kind of have this stigma that's attached to them where like everyone thinks their milk tastes like crap and it's poisonous or whatever. Yeah. And, like,
everyone's always surprised when they drink our goat milk.
For us, it's been, it's just wonderfully delicious. We drink it raw. It's very nutritious. It's great milk. And so being able to actually open people's eyes to that is really the key to these classes. Like with the classes, I don't charge very much. I charge, a small fee for people to come out and bring their kids, bring their family, bring whoever's mm-hmm. interested. And I give them a chance to milk the animal, to teach them about how to mm-hmm. care for them, a few different things.
And then they try
the milk, and it's always just a laugh. When they very first put the glass up to their face, they have this cringy look, and then they taste some, and they go, oh, that tastes like milk.
Yeah, and Doug
really good.
And Doug and Mindy are a really good example of someone who came to our class because they were interested in it, and they now actually have moved to a small homestead.
Yeah, well, and some friends of ours.
We
met them through a class. But yeah. what happened was they were into it, and they they took the class and they really took it to heart, and mm-hmm. they bought an animal and they milked that animal every day. And
that was just part of us having feeling like what we're doing is right, and even though it's right for us, just to share the information with others, because it may be right for others. It's not right for everyone, but it was right for them, and they were able to do it because we were here to,
help mentor them.
Yeah, so. Mentor them, and also, we still make mistakes, too, and so they have, good ideas, also.
They told me about the vinegar. There's this woman that they know that feeds her goats vinegar, apple cider vinegar yeah. and garlic powder, and it helps keep their systems very clean and very healthy.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought about that because I know there's people that use apple cider vinegar for mm-hmm. Health benefits, but I hadn't thought about I don't like drinking it, because it's strong.
It's great though. It's wonderful. The animals love it, and they actually stay a lot healthier. And so that's another part of this example of making friends with similar qualities of life. It's mm-hmm. wonderful, and the fact that they're actually living a more sustainable life is great. Now, one of the things with the podcast that I want to let you guys know is that you don't have to do this. You don't have to. There's ways of simplifying your life mm-hmm. and living more local without putting a goat in your backyard. You can find a small farm and become friends with the owners and, buy milk from them. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful way to do it as well. But if you do have the ability to keep some animals, I think it's a great way to live.
And I think I'm kind of the person who, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm the one who's constantly says, okay, well, this isn't for everyone, Josh. Maybe what can they do? What is a way that this can, someone that doesn't have, this land that we have, what can they do? What would be their option?
I get carried away with it.
I think it's great to also kind of think about, this isn't for everybody. So what can someone, alternative does a mom or a dad or, a family have, to owning a goat? Well, the alternative is, finding a goat dairy farm or
buy just a milk share in general.
Joining a CSA. There's, finding a local farm. And it's always great for the kids though, too, because then they can see where they get their food from. So I think we'll always try and put, how to do this on a smaller level for those who aren't going to own a goat or own chickens. Though I think chickens are easy and you should just own a chicken.
Or ducks.
Or duck. Ducks are quieter. Are quieter. And so we cover, what else do we have?
Well, I want to talk about meat, and I want to talk about my chicken slaughtering classes that I'm going to.
Oh, we talk about the classes that we want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So this year I'm going to not only do the goat milking classes, but I'm going to offer a a chicken slaughtering class. And I think that that's important because, you know, a lot of people are able to keep chickens now. A lot of the laws are changing and they're able to keep chickens even in cities. But, you know, the obvious side effect to having hens is having roosters. And you got to do something with the roosters. You can't just, you know, they're going to be around no matter what. So it's going to be a great class where I actually teach people how to process a chicken in a clean and safe manner. You know, but kind of like the thing about slaughtering a chicken is doing it is the most intimidating thing, doing it for the first time. So, you know, I'll kind of help bridge that gap where I show them how to do it, show them how it's supposed to be done. And from there, they should be able to easily do it every single time. So,
it's a good fun class. And the reason why we say that the side effect of having chickens is a rooster, and it's because when people buy a set or a group or whatever, a run of chickens, they're not all going to be hens, and so there will be roosters. And so you'll see in the ads in the paper or online that people are trying to get rid of these roosters because they only want hens. And so it's not because your chickens have fertilized eggs. It's because the chickens you bought, there's a rooster in that. And so you either can, one, have it on your dinner table or get rid of it. So those who want to try their hand at it, we'll offer a class for that. And what we noticed when we first went to do, we did a lot of research on how to eviscerate a chicken. And
It was intimidating.
Intimidating because we saw the videos, and the videos were really good. They were really good videos, but it wasn't like you were right there. So you weren't able to like stop the video and ask a question. And there were some parts where like, whoa, how, because when we got into doing it, there was a certain part that were like, whoa, how the heck did they do this?
Yeah, so... Now that's the knowledge that I want to pass along is the having people there learning hands on, making it simple and having them be able to ask a question if they have to, because it's not a hard thing to do, but it is intimidating at first. And once you know how to do it, you know how to do it forever. It's not the kind of thing that it's kind of like riding a bike. Once you know how to do it, you know how to do it.
Yeah. I think we were going to try and do a video, but the videos out there are actually really good. It's just that it doesn't allow you to ask the question. And I think it's important. So a class will allow people to ask questions and really kind of, you know, get into it and get there's certain things that just pop. Everyone has a different question too. So
if you're in our area and you want to take my class, then by all means, like send me an email or something. But, you know, if you're in a different area, look around. I mean, there's people there's people doing what we're doing everywhere. And, you know, if it's finding someone who knows how to do something, looking on some of these message boards or groups on the internet and finding people who know how to do these things offering
or going to hang out with them and help them. You would be surprised about what people know. And so say you go to get fresh fruit from an orchard near your area. Why don't you talk to the owner? I bet the owner knows someone that raises chickens.
Yeah, or just ask your grandma.
Or ask your grandma. Josh's grandma knows all about it. So that chicken class, the meat, the milking class, cheese. We're not going to do a cheese class because we actually probably should make
more. Yeah, we're going to. That's something that we're kind of working on, and I need to kind of perfect some of my skills. I want to get into cheese making is an art in itself, and so I need to get much more into that to kind of master it before I can teach it to someone else. But I've always thought that the best way to know something is to teach it to someone. So don't be afraid that once you learn something, teach it to someone. And you'll feel...
Even if you feel like you just still don't know it,
Because it forces you to figure out all of the details, all of the questions that someone would ask.
And that's for anything in life, not just homesteading.
Yeah, not just raising animals or growing food.
It could be math or writing a poem or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, with that said, I think that we're running, we're running out of things to talk about, but we have quite a few things that we're trying to do this next year. So we'll keep you posted. We're going to be, obviously carrying on the podcast, and we'll try to, let you know what's going on as it comes around. So look forward to all those upcoming episodes.
And it was nice meeting you guys today.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
right, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed, and don't forget to give us a call.